If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because,
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Media reports from the British press in the aftermath of Wednesday's truck and knife attack on Parliament, resulting in the death of at least four people and catastrophic injuries to more than a dozen more, have focused in on the identity of the perpetrator in vague terms. We knew, according to the Telegraph, that the attacker was described by witnesses as, quote, an Asian guy in about his 40s carrying a knife about 7 or 8 inches long. The Daily Star of the UK called the suspect a black or Asian man who was spotted running with an 8-inch knife. The Daily Mirror called him, quote, reportedly Asian in appearance. The picture of the suspect shows that he is, in fact, some guy from the Middle East or Pakistan. In America, Asian has a different connotation than it does in the British press. It generally means people of Pakistani or Indian descent, not people from Southeast Asia, as it does in the United States. It's also often a cover for Islamic background. The press will generally avoid talking about the religion of a suspect in favor of focusing in on ethnicity, and then they will broaden out the ethnic label to include people who aren't Pakistani in order to create the impression that the Pakistani perpetrator might not be a Muslim. In May 2012, the BBC reported that groups representing Sikhs and Hindus complained to the media about the use of the term Asian to apply to 9 Pakistani suspects arrested for grooming girls for sex. The network of Sikh organizations UK, the Hindu Forum of Britain, the Sikh Media Monitoring Group UK accused the media of unwillingness to mention the, quote, disproportionate representation of Muslims in such cases and the non-Muslim identities of the victims, calling the Asian label, quote, unfair to other communities of Asian responsibility, adding, quote, we believe that in this case, the government itself is sanctioning the use of the term Asian as a way of clouding responsibility. The same pattern held true in reporting of the Rotherham incident, where British authorities, fearful of supposed backlash, held back on investigations into a serious upsurge in rape and child sex slavery involving Muslim men. Up to 1,400 children were involved. The police filed a report in 2010 openly mentioning, quote, a problem with networks of Asian offenders, both locally and nationally, and stated that the crimes were related to culture. From 1997 to 2013, the crimes were under police and underreported. This is how media and government turn individual criminal issues into actual tribal conflicts, by refusing to hold everyone to the same standard, refusing to acknowledge that not all cultures are equally compatible with Western standards of decency, and instead using ethnic descriptors rather than ideological ones. The media and authorities actually drive xenophobia rather than alleviating it, as well as sweeping up innocent people in the net. Sikhs and Hindus do not deserve to be placed in the same risk category as radical Muslims with regard to terrorism. Attempting to protect moderate Muslims by ignoring all ideological leanings whatsoever is stupid. And using the overbroad ethnic descriptor Asian, pretending that Indians and Pakistanis are part of the same ethnic group for purposes of avoiding ideological conclusion jumping, is purposeful obfuscation of accuracy. Maybe the terrorist isn't Muslim. We now know that he is. That would have been possible. But it's not fine to give the public misleading information on the grounds that they might jump to conclusions suggested by probabilistic thinking and then lump in innocent people in the process. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. Okay, I'm going to be spitting some hot fire today because there's a lot of lying going on. I'm going to debunk all of it because it's really maddening. It's really making me upset. I'm very sick of it. I am annoyed. I am frustrated. Everyone is lying. They're all lying to you, and it is making me sick to my stomach, and so we are going to put an end to that today when we discuss the truth about what's happening on this Trump-Russia stuff and on the wiretapping stuff and on all the rest of it, on Trump care. So many lies, so little time, so much to get to. But first, we have to say thank you to our advertisers over at Wink. So, if you are somebody who knows nothing about wine, like me, if you're somebody who would buy just a bottle of grape juice that is fermented too long and think that that was wine, number one, you don't know anything about wine. Number two, you need to actually go to trywink.com/Ben because you're going over to somebody's house. And now you need to bring a decent bottle of wine, and that old bottle of Ketum ain't going to do it. So you need something that's actually going to go with the food. You go to Wink, trywink.com, and they ask you what your tastes are like, what kind of flavors you like, and then they personalize a bottle to you. They tell you what bottle you will like. All the bottles of wine are cheap. Our staff has tried them. They say that the wine is really, really top-notch, which is why they're always drunk. trywink.com/Ben, you get $20 off plus complimentary shipping when you trywink.com /Ben, and it's W-I-N-C. It used to be Club W. It's W-I-N-C, wink.com/Ben. And again, the bottles are not random. They are personalized to your palate, and you can rate the wine that you choose so that they won't send you the same bottle. Again, if you don't like the wine, they will replace it with a bottle that you like. No questions asked. 100% satisfaction guarantee. Try wink.com/Ben. They cover the shipping for $20 off right now, which is could be like two bottles. So that's a pretty solid deal. Try wink.com/Ben. Terrific service, particularly if you're ignorant about what wines are good. Okay, so... So, as I say, lots of lying going on, many a lie from all sides, and it's making me want to vomit. So, let's begin with the biggest lie told by the media last night, that Donald Trump is on the verge of impeachment. All is over. Donald Trump, they found the silver bullet. Anderson Cooper is on CNN, and he says, we have new information. What is that new information? Well, we now know that the FBI may or may not have information that Donald Trump's team was coordinating with the Russians in order to release info on Hillary Clinton during the campaign. Here is the Silver Fox, Anderson Cooper.
CNN's Pamela Brown and Evan Perez join us now. They broke the story along with our justice reporter, Shimon Procupes. Pam, first, what are you learning?
Well, Anderson, the FBI has information that indicates associates of President Donald Trump communicated with suspected Russian operatives to possibly coordinate the release of information damaging to Hillary Clinton's campaign, U.S. officials told us. FBI Director James Comey made his bombshell announcement, as you'll recall, Monday before Congress that the FBI is investigating the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. So the FBI is now reviewing this information, which includes human intelligence, travel, business, and phone records, as well as accounts of in-person meetings, according to the officials we spoke to.
All this sounds pretty damning, right? This sounds like, ooh, the FBI has the material that's going to get Trump. His associates were working with the Ruskies, and they were going to take down Hillary Clinton. Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, he comes forward, and he says basically the same thing.
But you admit all you have right now is a circumstantial case.
Actually, no, Chuck. I can tell you that the case is more than that, and I can't go into the particulars, but there is more than circumstantial evidence now, so... Again, I think
so you have Clapper, seen direct evidence of collusion.
I don't want to go into specifics, but I will say that there is evidence that is not circumstantial and is very much worthy of investigation.
Okay, this is rumor mongering. Here's what the CNN report actually said. The FBI has information that indicates associates of President Donald Trump communicated with suspected Russian operatives to possibly coordinate the release of information damaging to Hillary Clinton's campaign. Okay, so in the first sentence, you have three qualifying words: indicates, suspected, and possibly. And then when you read down to, of course, paragraph 9 or 10 in the article, quote, one law enforcement official said the information in hand suggests people connected to the campaign were in contact, and it appeared they were giving the thumbs up to release information when it was ready. But other U.S. officials who spoke to CNN say it's premature to draw that inference from the information gathered so far, since it's largely circumstantial. So no, Adam Schiff, apparently the information is largely circumstantial, according to other U.S. officials. So they got one person saying it's not circumstantial, a bunch of people saying it is circumstantial, and the entire media running with it, Trump is on the ropes, it's all over. Okay, no, it's not. Come on, cut it out. Okay, so that is side one, exaggerating the case or lying or making the case out to be ironclad when it simply is not. Then on the other side, we have a bunch of people saying that Trump has been vindicated in his wiretapping claims. So, no, he hasn't. No, he hasn't. Okay, I'm just being honest here. If you don't want honesty, there are plenty of other places that will tell you that Trump is the most vindicated person who has ever lived and all is well and all this crap. Okay, here is what Trump actually said. Trump said that like McCarthy, there was purposeful wiretapping of Trump Tower. And I'm not even going to be specific. I'm not even going to say that it was wiretapping of Trump Tower specifically. We'll make the claim a little broader. We'll say that Trump said that Obama directed surveillance at him. And we'll make it even broader than that. Trump said that Obama intelligence officials directed surveillance at him and his officials. Okay, that's what we will say. Now, is there any evidence of that whatsoever? No, there isn't any evidence of that whatsoever. Okay, all the evidence suggests so far that if there were Trump associates who were caught up in the quote-unquote surveillance, they were caught up incidentally, meaning we don't have any FISA warrants that we know about. Other than, I think, one report in, like, Heat Street or something, there are no FISA warrants that we know about that were actually directed at U.S. citizens on this one. There's no FISA warrant that went out on Mike Flynn, for example. There's no FISA warrant as far as we know. There was no direct surveillance of these people. Now, does that mean that there was no surveillance of these people? No, that there was surveillance of these people in the same way that, for example, you wouldn't say that the cops were targeting you if they were staking out a drug den and you were a client. Okay, they weren't targeting you. They were targeting the drug den and you were a client. Okay, this is the same thing that's happening here. They were targeting the Russians and the Russians were talking with Trump people and some of the Trump people were on the line with the Russians. That is not the same thing as what Trump was claiming, which was Obama basically put a team on me and my friends and then he was attempting to gather information on us so that he could release it and take us down. Okay, that's not true. So, doesn't matter. People have gotten into this business and it's driving me absolutely up a wall, up a freaking wall, okay? The left did it during the Michael Brown, Darren Wilson scenario where they claimed hands up, don't shoot. And people like me said, that never happened. And the left said, ah, you're right, it never happened. But the facts may not be true, but the narrative is true. And we'd say, what the hell does that mean? Why don't you show me some facts generating a narrative and then we'll determine if it's true? You can't just say the narrative is true without any facts to back it up. Okay, the right is now doing a lot of the same stuff on Trump's surveillance claims. So, it is true, factually speaking, that there were people who are in the Trump team who are caught up in the surveillance net that was directed at people who are not the Trump team. Okay, that is true. You don't have to draw a narrative from it. Okay, that's just a fact. What is not true is when you take Trump's original claim that he was purposefully wiretapped by Obama, and then you broaden it out to not only include Trump, but also his team, and then you broaden it out to also include incidental collection of information, and then you claim Trump is vindicated. That's a bunch of horse crap. Okay, so here's what Devin Nunes said yesterday. We're going to go through this in detail because I think it is important to debunk things that are not true. I still care about things like truth, even if they don't benefit my side, quote unquote. Okay, here is Devin Nunes. He starts off by saying this is his big announcement that was supposedly earth-shattering yesterday. He is the ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, and he had just gone to the White House and met with Trump on this.
I was concerned that other surveillance activities were used against President Trump and his associates. So first, I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. Third, I have confirmed that additional names of Trump transition team members were unmasked. And fourth and finally, I want to be clear, none of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of Russian activities or of the Trump team.
Okay, so here's the important part. So we'll get to the wiretapping part, the leaks part in a second, because Nunes is right on the leaks. That is the most important part of what is happening in all of this. I agree with that, because again, there is no hard information that one, Obama directed wiretapping at Trump, or two, that Trump is in the pocket of the Russians. But what we do know with 100% certitude is that Obama intelligence officials were leaking information to the press. That is a crime, okay? And those people need to be tracked down and prosecuted because regardless of how they got the information on Mike Flynn being on the phone with Sergey Kislyak or whatever his name is, they were not supposed to release that. That is illegal. So the last part of what he's saying is not the controversial part. It's the first part. What did he say? Here is what he exactly said again. The intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Incidentally. Okay, so for all the people claiming that this vindicates Trump, no, incidentally means the drug deal I was talking about before. Incidentally means that they were listening to the Russians and some Trump people were on the other end of the line. That is not the same thing as what Trump claimed. And to pretend that it is to be dishonest. Okay, and then it is clarified. Okay, a reporter says, were these communications picked up at Trump Tower?
Was any of this, these communications, maybe picked up at Trump Tower?
We don't know that yet. That's why we need to get the information.
Okay, and then he is asked specifically, was Trump targeted or was this just incidental collection of information? Was he just on the other line?
Was the president also part of that incidental collection? His communications?
Yes.
They were?
Yes.
So let me just clarify. The president of the United States' personal communications were intercepted.
It's very, when we talk about intelligence products here, we got to be very careful. From what I know right now, it looks like incidental collection.
Stop it there.
We don't know.
Incidental collection. Okay, clip four. Are you concerned that the surveillance was done illegally? Was there anything illegal here? Here's Nunes.
Are you concerned that any of the surveillance was done illegally or it was incidental but a legal
That's a great, yeah, that's a really good question. So, I believe it was all done legally.
Stop it there. Again, that's not what Trump is claiming. Trump is claiming that he was illegally surveilled. That's what he says. Okay, so again, is this great stuff? No, but are you claiming the intelligence community is doing things that they're not doing? If Trump is doing that, that's bad. It's just mind-boggling to me that people are willing to overlook basic truth because they want a political agenda to win here. Okay, I hate this. Trump could have easily made the case that the leaks that are coming out of the Obama apparatus are the problem. That was the case that Mark Levin made. Okay, Mark Levin was right. Okay, the case that Trump has made is not that, because Trump reads the headline, assumes what he wants to assume, and then determines that it's true based on his gut that day. He basically said that today in an interview with Time, which I'm going to get to in a second. Again, just more fibs. Ugh. Okay, continues. He has now asked Devin Nunes, the House Intel chair, he has asked about whether the president's conversation appeared in intelligence reports.
Mr. Chairman, was the president's conversations or anything about the president appearing in intelligence reports? Is that what you're saying?
I have seen intelligence reports that clearly show that the president-elect and his team were, I guess, at least monitored and disseminated out in intelligence in what appears to be raw, or I shouldn't say raw, but intelligence reporting channels.
Nunes is not being exact in his language here. It's annoying. When he says his team was monitored, people are latching onto that to say, ooh, that means that Trump was right. He was surveilled. Except that Nunes said a half dozen times in this press conference that it was the Russians or whoever was on the other end. He doesn't even say it was the Russians. He says it was whoever on the other end of the line was being surveilled, and Trump was caught up incidentally. He said that 1,000 times. We've just played it, him doing it a bunch of times in a row. Okay, and the weirdest part is that Nunes actually said it has nothing to do with the Russian investigations. Also, all of this was happening between the election and Trump's inauguration. Okay, so in other words, Trump claimed he was wiretapped in October, purposefully by Obama. Not one element of that has been verified. Okay, not one element of that has been verified. It just hasn't. Again, does that mean that the leaks are okay? No, the leaks are terrible. And that's why it's so stupid that everybody on the left keeps denying that the leaks are bad, and everybody on the right keeps saying Trump was right. No, all of it's crap. And then, finally, Nunes is asked, this morning he was asked, actually, if he got all of this information from the White House, because he apparently went to the White House and gave them the information before he gave the Intelligence Committee all this new information, supposedly, that he's breaking, this clip 16, and he won't answer the question.
Over the course of this investigation, we've had many sources who have come to this committee, and as you can imagine, many don't want you to know, they don't want anyone to know who they are, and I think you guys in the press understand this, you have your own sources.
But there's suspicion that this was engineered by the Trump administration to muddy the waters, give them some political cover.
Yeah, look, I came out here and briefed you guys. Yesterday, I said, this is what I'm going to go do so that you knew. The president didn't invite me over. I called down there and invited myself because I thought he needed to understand what I saw and that he needed to try to get that information because he has every right to see it.
Adam Schiff responds to this and he says, look, this is, you don't get to not tell the rest of the Intel committee and then just go coordinate with the president on something that is currently at issue in investigation. And I hate to say this, but Adam Schiff is not entirely incorrect here. It's Adam Schiff, Democrat of California. And I can't stand Adam Schiff, but everybody's lying. It's the worst. Okay.
It's really impossible for us to evaluate any of the merits of what the chairman has said. But I can say this. The chairman will need to decide whether he is the chairman of an independent investigation into conduct, which includes allegations of potential coordination between the Trump campaign and the Russians, or he is going to act as a surrogate of the White House because he cannot do both.
How dare Schiff go after Nunes for all of this? Okay, you know what? Okay, see this? I don't have my shoe with me. This is the shoe. Put it on the other foot. You see this shoe? Put it on the other foot. Let's pretend for a second that there was some independent investigation of Barack Obama going on. Okay, and Barack Obama made an allegation that Republicans were targeting him. Okay, and the head of the investigation into that thing then went to the White House without telling the other Republican members of the committee, briefed the president on all that stuff, and then came back with a bunch of talking points that helped the president. Would you be okay with that? I wouldn't be okay with that. Everybody needs to stop with this crap. What is true is true. What is false, and when people claim, now Trump is claiming he's vindicated. He's not vindicated! Okay, Trump is claiming vindication on something where he's not vindicated, and I'll explain why this matters in a second, and it's not just all talk and jabber, okay? Here's Trump saying he was vindicated.
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do. I very much appreciated the fact that they found what they found, but I somewhat do.
I somewhat do. Okay, well, of course he feels vindicated, because anything that provides him any fig leaf under which to hide makes him feel vindicated. Now, I'm going to explain in a second why all this matters and why it's not just a bunch of jabber and why I think there is something that is deep at stake that I don't like, okay? But first, I want to say thank you to our advertisers over at Zeel. So, ZEEL.com, promo code Ben, will get you $25 off a massage. Zeel.com, I need one right now. Everybody in my family has used Zeel. Zeel is fantastic. You schedule a massage for your house. They do a background check on you to make sure that you're not some sort of creeper. But the people who come and give you the massage, they're all professionally licensed masseuses. We've had four or five different masseuses actually do massages on people in my family. My sister has gotten a massage through Zeel. I think two actually through Zeel. My father has had one. I've had one. My wife has had one. My mother-in-law has had one. Zeel is a fantastic service. And again, not only is it cheaper than having to go to a spa, it also means that you don't have to wait in line at a spa. You actually get to schedule it at your house. They bring all the materials. They bring the table. They bring the soothing music, the whole deal. And it is just an excellent service. One of the things that I like to say is that in life, there are certain things that just make you feel rich, even if you're not. And Zeel is one of those things. Zeel is one of the things that will make you feel not only rich, but healthier after you use it. To start off right now, you go to ZEEL.com. Make sure to click add promo code at checkout and use my name, Ben. You get $25 off your first massage by doing that. It's a pretty solid deal. ZEEL.com, Zeel.com, promo code Ben. And you can use their iPhone or Android app, and you get that special offer with promo code Ben. That also lets them know that we sent you as a thank you to them. Okay, so the reason that all of this is important, and then I have to go to another set of lies on Trump care that Democrats are telling. The reason all of this is important is because, unfortunately, President Trump has an extraordinarily casual relationship with the truth. That's not good for a Republican president. If you want him to succeed, he needs to have a certain level of public trust, and that level of public trust can only be built if he says true things. Well, he did an interview with Time Magazine, did President Trump today, and this interview is just, it's just awful, okay? Again, I have a very consistent standard here. When people tell the truth, I like it. When people lie, when they obfuscate, I don't. So, Trump, honest to God, the man treats the truth like a whore. He treats the truth like a whore, and he leaves some money on the bedside stand in pursuit of his actual goal, which is power. And you may like the things that he does with that, but let's not pretend that truth is not truth. Democrats do the same thing. I don't want to pretend that this is solely Trump, okay? Democrats do the same thing. Politicians do it all the time, but he's supposed to be somebody who represents me and represents the American people, and he's instead pursuing whatever idiocy comes into his mind at a given time. I'm really angry about this because it's undermining what could be a great agenda. It's undermining what could be great policies. It's undermining true things that need to be said because he can't keep his mouth shut. Okay, it's really frustrating. It's really frustrating. So two things. One, Trump, number one, will say things that are just blatantly untrue, and then he will defend them all the way down the line. And two, Trump mistakes predicting things for saying true things. Those are not the same thing. Okay, they are not the same thing. Donald Trump, for example, says things like, I was totally right about Brexit. Okay, he did. He predicted Brexit in March 2016. Congratulations. Does that mean that he said true things about Ted Cruz's father? No, it doesn't mean he's a truth-telling person. It means that he made a good prediction on Brexit. Okay, bookies do it all the time. Would you trust a bookie to take care of your kids at night? Okay, not the same thing. Just because you predict things, and I shouldn't say all things, you predict some things correctly, that does not mean that you are a trustworthy person. And the reason that I say this is because in this interview, Trump says he's a very instinctual person, but my instinct turns out to be right. So he just says things without any sort of verification. Number one, he says, He was asked about the Obama wiretap Trump Tower comments. He said, we will see what happens. Look, I predicted a lot of things that took a little bit of time. Okay, that was not a prediction. That was a claim of fact about what has already happened. Okay, if I say that the War of 1812 was not engaged in 1812, that's not a prediction. That's a misstatement of fact. Okay, if I say the Civil War didn't happen between the North and the South in America, my answer to that cannot be afterward, well, you know, eventually I'll be proved right. No, it's just not true. And he's supposed to know. He's the president. Okay, when he still says in this interview that he'll be proved right about his unsubstantiated claim of 3 million undocumented votes in the 2016 election. no, you don't have any evidence of that, and you claimed that it happened, so you have to provide evidence of that. I like evidence. I like facts. Don't tell me that the narrative is true and the facts are false. It's a bunch of crap. He justified again the Ted Cruz, again, okay, like a year after it happened, the Ted Cruz's father murdered JFK garbage. He called the, he said, quote, that was in a newspaper. That was in a newspaper. Number one, it was in the National Enquirer. Number two, so the hell what? You're the one who keeps saying that the news is fake news and you can't trust what you read in the newspaper unless apparently it's the National Enquirer. In the same interview, he calls the Wall Street Journal fake news. So just to get this straight, the National Enquirer is real news, but the Wall Street Journal is fake news. And when he's asked about his accusations that British intelligence was complicit in wiretapping him, he goes, why do you say I have to apologize? I'm just quoting the newspaper, just like I quoted the judge the other day, Judge Napolitano. You're the president. You can pick up the phone and find out whether this is true. Don't we have some responsibility to the truth? And look, this is not about hurting Trump. The minute he starts doing good things, I'm more than happy to praise him. I want to praise him, okay? I want the president to do good things so I can praise him, but I'm not going to praise him lying just because it benefits my side. That's a bunch of horse manure. And people who do that are complicit in destroying their own credibility and the credibility of politics. We cannot have conversations with each other if all we do is say the facts don't matter, all that matters is my narrative. If that's the case, the facts don't matter at all, and we cannot have a conversation in the slightest. Okay, with that rant done, I now want to move on to Trump Care and where that is, because that is still moving along, and there's a lot of controversy over where that's going, and a big lie that is currently happening from the left on Trump Care. We'll talk about that in just a second. But for that, you have to go over to dailywire.com and become a subscriber. Dailywire.com. $8 a month gets you a subscription. If you want an annual subscription over at Daily Wire, then you can get a free signed copy of Reasons to Vote Democrat, a comprehensive guide by our very own Michael Knowles, just a brilliant, thorough piece of literature on why to vote Democrat. And an Amazon bestseller. It sold tens of thousands of copies. The dude's getting rich off of it, which is shocking. But in any case, dailywire.com, you can get a free copy. It's a lot of fun. $8 a month, and annual subscribers get that copy of that book. If you just want to listen to the rest of the show a little bit later, you go over to iTunes or SoundCloud, and you can check out the show over there. Leave a review at iTunes. We do appreciate it. And this is the largest conservative podcast in the nation. Okay, so there is another myth going around, another lie that's going around about Trump Care. Okay, so now there's a lot of talk about what Republicans are going to do on Trump Care today, because Trump Care is highly unpopular the way that it stands. A lot of conservatives in the House are very concerned about it. And basically, Trump is trying to cram this thing through. Now, the question that I have is why they're trying to cram this thing through so fast. I think one of the reasons they're trying to cram this through is that Trump does not have the patience for a long policy battle over Trump Care, which he clearly does not, you know, care that much about or understand. He just wants a win. Sean Spicer came out yesterday. He said either this thing passes or there's no plan B.
So how confident you are, I don't know if you want to rate it, the percentage on it, like how confident are you that the bill will pass? And if it doesn't pass, is there a plan B?
Like, no, there is no plan. I mean, this is, there's plan A and plan A. We're going to get this done.
And so you're confident, 100% confident?
We're going to get it done.
Okay, we're going to get it done. There's no plan B. Okay, most likely scenario at this point is that they pass something in the House, and then the Senate rewrites the entire thing, passes something different, they go to reconciliation. That's the possibility here, that the two sides come together in a conference committee and then ram something through that nobody likes very much. But one of the things that leftists are lying about Trump Care is one of the concessions that Trump is now making or trying to make to the House Freedom Caucus is this attempt to get rid of a provision in Obamacare that forces insurance companies to cover what they call essential health benefits. Right now, Obamacare says you cannot be an insurance company and not offer plans that cover maternity care. It has to cover all of these things, right? It has to cover mental care, pediatric, dental, health and vision, maternity care, a bunch of other areas. All insurance plans have to cover this. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, hey, I'm a young single man. What do I need maternity care for? That's a good question. That's a really good question. It's a question for which Democrats don't have the answer. But they say that if we get rid of this provision, insurance companies will immediately stop covering maternity care altogether, and women won't be able to get insurance coverage for maternity. This is idiotic. This is stupid. How do I know that this is stupid? Because my wife has been pregnant two times. Okay? And the fact is that, you know, I think that we might have had insurance that I covered myself one of those times. It might have been through our company. I can't remember. But in any case, the idea that there was no maternity care for decades in the country before Obamacare is just asinine. I remember that my mom was pregnant several times. I'm sure your mom was pregnant to 1.2. And I'm sure that she probably had health insurance that covered her maternity. Okay, and if that's the case, then that wasn't because of Obamacare, because you were probably born, if you're listening to this, after Obamacare was implemented, unless you're one of my very, very youngest listeners. Okay, the stupidity here is that the Democrats think that if something isn't mandated by the government, it disappears. That's just dumb. That's just dumb, and it's a lie. It's not that women are going to not have maternity insurance anymore if Obamacare doesn't mandate it. Number one, a bunch of states do mandate it. Number two, even if they didn't, there'd be a bunch of companies competing for your dollar, insuring young women, women who want maternity care, insuring young women, competing in terms of cost, and betting that you're not going to get pregnant this year, right? That's how insurance companies make their money. What they would do is they would insure a bunch of, let's say it was just young women buying maternity care. So they would insure a bunch of young women, assuming that most women are not going to get pregnant more than once every 3 years or so. And then knowing that if you have millions of women, most of whom are not going to get pregnant, the vast majority of who are not going to get pregnant, you know, except maybe once every 5 years on average, once every 6 years on average, you can still make off with a boatload of cash in terms of your insurance rates. But the left doesn't think that's true. They think the government has to cram everything down everybody's throat, and it's really, really, really stupid. So that's a lie that the left is telling about Trump care. The controversy continues. Mike Lee, who, as I say, is, I think, the conscience of the Senate at this point, Senator Mike Lee from Utah, he says that Trump care is going to fail in the Senate. And the next one.
But apparently a lot of your colleagues who feel the same way, I'm talking about on the House side, their arms can be twisted. What do you think?
This bill is going to fail. It's going to fail because it doesn't have enough support in the House of Representatives and it doesn't have enough support in the Senate.
How do you know that?
Well, because I've talked to a whole lot of people, enough people that I know that it's going to fall short of a majority in the House and it's going to fall short of a majority in the Senate.
Okay, the big problem right now is that the House has an interest in passing something that dies in the Senate because then they get to say that it's the Senate's fault. Trump has an interest in passing anything through the House so it doesn't look like some sort of giant defeat. So he's going to make a bunch of concessions. I think it will pass the House. It's a mess. If the bill passes, it's wildly unpopular. There's a poll out today that shows only 17% of Americans like this bill. That's really a problem, obviously. It's not good if it passes. It's not good if it fails, because that's going to lead to this rift between Trump and the Republicans that I think is going to be unbridgeable, and Trump will likely move to the left. It's a disaster area. This is why the Republicans should have just passed a repeal, but they didn't have the stomach to do that, and so now we are stuck with this mess. We'll give you updates on that as they come in, because obviously that's unfolding in real time right now. Okay, time for a quick thing I like, a thing I hate, and then we will get to the mailbag, because today is the mailbag, and we'll take some live questions over at dailywire.com if you're a subscriber. Okay, things I like. We're doing monster movies. So this one was not seen a lot. It's pretty anti-religious, but it's actually a well-made movie. The movie is The Mist. It was based on a Stephen King novel. As with all Stephen King novels, it is replete with leftist garbage, but it is entertaining, and the movie is pretty entertaining. Thomas Jane, I think, plays the lead. Here's a little bit of the preview for it.
Whoa! Mom, Dad, you gotta come see! The birdhouse is all bashed! You just gotta... Come on! Whoa!
Having spoken, the doomsayer departs.
Why don't you get Billy dressed? I'll take a minute down with him. Hit the store before it gets all bought out.
How'd you folks hold up in the storm?
Big insurance day.
Sorry to hear that.
What's going on?
It's death.
It's a monster flick. Frank Darabont is the director. Mathis informs me that this is the only time that Stephen King said that the ending of the film was better than his ending in the book. It is not a happy story. I'll just put it that way. You know, if you're going in for a feel-good flick, if you're going in for Jurassic World or something, no, this is a very, very, very dark movie. But it is a good solid monster flick. So you can check that out. I think it's available on Amazon streaming at this point. Okay, time for a thing that I hate. Okay, so this one is just nutty. So I have to play it because it's totally crazy. This is clip 15. A feminist transgender woman, which is to say a young man who believes that he is a woman because he has long hair and makeup. He talks about why it is that lesbians are sexist against women or something.
Recently on the internet, there's been a lot of discussion around genital preferences and transphobia. In this video, I'm going to use the word cissexism instead of transphobia, but they're really similar words. At its most basic, cissexism means prejudice or discrimination against transgender people. So what's been happening is that some people are making the argument that it's not cissexist at all to only be attracted to people with one kind of genitals. For example, these people might argue that being attracted to only women with in no way negatively affects trans people. On the other hand, I would argue that it's more complicated than that. We all have our implicit biases built into our preferences, and gender isn't as simple as just the genitals you have. But after I say that, I usually get a bunch of blatantly cis-sexist responses. So I thought I'd address all of those responses at once. Number one, you're being homophobic. Number two, you're upholding rape culture. Number three, I'm allowed to have my preferences. Number four, I have a trans friend who says this is okay. Number five, I'm triggered by says because of past sexual trauma. It's fine to not find people attractive, but it's mean to constantly yell about how unattractive you find those people, especially when those people are oppressed. For another imperfect analogy...
Okay. So, the argument that this human is making is that if you are a lesbian and you are only into women who don't have penises, this makes you sexist against women because trans women still have penises. You with me? No? Neither am I. It's confusing. So the idea here is that if you're not a transphobe, then that means that you believe that a man with a penis is just as likely to be a woman as a woman with a vagina. And if you're not willing to have sex with the man with the penis, then that demonstrates that you are actually a sexist against transphobic, against trans women. Right? If you're a woman who doesn't want to have sex with Caitlyn Jenner because Caitlyn Jenner still has a penis, then that is because you are a transphobe. Okay. Here's the thing. The thing is this. If you only want to have sex with a member of the opposite gender, and the genitals have something to do with that, can we acknowledge that biology suggests the genitals have something to do with that? This does not make you a person who fears transsexual people or transgender people. It makes you a person who wants to have sex with a non-transgender person. And that's okay. It doesn't mean that you're a sexist. It doesn't mean that you're discriminatory. Okay, it turns out that lots of dudes would rather have sex with a woman who is biologically a woman than a man who says he is a woman, or a man who has a mental disorder and thinks he is a woman, or a man who has gone through a surgery to create an artificial genital system. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. And proclaiming there's something wrong with it, I mean, if you want to win friends and influence people, transgender rights advocates, this is not the way you go about it, is by calling all the people who don't want to have sex with you transphobes, because it turns out that a lesbian would rather not have sex with a person with a penis, with a dude, because that person might be a woman still or something. I mean, it's just foolishness. Ugh. All right. Other things that one more thing that I hate, and then we'll do mailbag. So there's this guy who's out there with a book about how wonderful he is, what a great abortionist he is. And he says that people need to stop saying he's a bad Christian just because he kills babies.
And Dr. King said what made that person good was his ability to reverse the question of concern. And whereas everyone else passed by and didn't help, that person stopped to help because he asked, what will happen to this person if I don't stop to help? And that resonated with me deeply as someone providing abortion care, as someone taking care of women who needed abortion care. And so I became morally convinced that it was not a conflict of my Christian values to provide abortion care. And in fact, it became unethical to me not to do so. Well, as someone who's providing abortions exclusively, when I'm in the clinic setting, most of what I do has to do with meeting the regulations associated with abortion care.
Okay, so this guy claims that he is a religious Christian, and he says he performs his abortions because he is a Christian. No. Christianity, not hot on abortion. It just isn't. And just because you have a different interpretation of the Bible than like than the New Testament has had for the last 2,000 odd years, just because you have a different interpretation doesn't mean that you get to reset the standard of religion to meet you. This is one of the things that it's sort of a pet peeve of mine. I see this in Judaism all the time. People reset the standard of Judaism and then suggest that things that are absolutely biblically mandated not to be good are now good, but don't say I'm a bad Jew just because of that. Well, no, if Judaism has any standard at all and you violate the obvious standards of Judaism, this means that you are not performing your duties as a Jew. If you say that you are a Christian and then you're going around killing babies in the eighth month or the fifth month or the fourth month, if you make your living killing babies, then it's very difficult for you to claim with credibility that people should not say that you're a bad Christian. It's the same thing as some, I mean, really, from the Christian point of view, it's like saying that somebody who murders kids, like fully grown kids, that person can still be a wonderful Christian. Listen, how you believe is between you and God. Our judgment as to whether you are a faithful Christian from a societal point of view should have something to do with your behavior, not just your belief system. God judges how you believe, but we can certainly judge your behavior and judge your adherence to a particular set of values that are clearly articulated by that behavior. Okay, time for the mailbag, so let's do some mailbag. Ryan says, hey Ben, I was having a debate with a friend about the role of government in the economy, and I intentionally took a laissez-faire stance. However, my friend asked me how we stop the creation of monopolies if the government refuses to get involved. I wasn't sure how to respond to this. Do you think the government should have the power to break up monopolies? Okay, number one, it is almost impossible to have a free market monopoly. Very, very difficult to have a free market monopoly, because at the very least, what you end up with is a bunch of startups attempting to compete with the monopoly, and the monopoly will buy out the startups, which means that the startups actually make a fair bit of money. And this happens a lot in industry. Most monopolies, historically speaking, have been governmentally created. It's the government granting a charter to a certain company. Right, Britain used to do this all the time. So did the Dutch. They'd have these shipping companies, and it would be the Royal Dutch Shipping Company, right? And so they would grant a monopoly to that company, and that company would be able to charge up the wazoo because they had a monopoly. The problem with monopoly is the idea that you can charge an inordinate amount of money for a good that could be produced relatively cheaply elsewhere. If you have a monopoly because you have the most competitive product anywhere, that's not a problem for the consumer. So to give an example, the federal government declared Microsoft to be a monopoly in the late 1990s. That was idiotic because Microsoft, number one, was not a monopoly. And number two, within 5 years, Apple was dominating Microsoft in the market, at least in terms of computer sales, demonstrating that it was a monopoly. Okay, monopolies generally have to be produced by government. It's very rare that you can cite a case where a monopoly is produced by the private sector because, specifically, anytime somebody starts to make money, somebody else jumps into the industry in order to compete with that person and grab some of that money. Jacob says, Ben, what is your favorite movie of all time? I think I've said this before. I think my favorite movie of all time, if I had to take one movie, it would be The Lives of Others. It was also William F. Buckley's favorite movie from 2007, foreign film about the East German Stasi, and then surveilling innocent Germans and how people learn to resist tyranny. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful film, The Lives of Others. If you haven't seen it, not for the kids, but if you haven't seen it, it is a beautiful film, Shakespearean. It's a tragedy, actually, that the guy who's the lead in that film gives a stunning performance, and he ended up dying of cancer, I think, within a couple of months of the end of filming. But it's a truly terrific film. Harrison says, Dear Supreme Overlord Ben, I think you got me mixed up with Clavin. Isn't that Clavin's title? If you could give El Presidente three pieces of advice, what would they be? Okay, so number one, tell the truth. Okay, stop lying. Say things that are only factual. Number two, you are not king, and that means that you should attempt to shrink the size and scope of government rather than attempting to dominate it. And number three, I would say, you know, see your position as a job rather than seeing it as a platform. So your job is to come in here and do your constitutional duty. It is not to mouth off and do rallies all the time. And I would give the same three pieces of advice to any president, not just this president. Now, will this president listen to me? No, I don't think so. Neither did Obama. That wouldn't be a great shock. Very few politicians listen to simple advice like tell the truth, see your job as a job, and shrink the size of your power. Very few politicians stick to that. Crow says, Ben, you convinced me to go get mental help for my transgenderism. I'm going back to living as normal life as possible. How do you suggest we help more people? Also, I'd like to thank you for helping me to help myself. I really can't thank you enough. I hope a subscription will work. Godspeed, dude. Well, Crow, honestly, that's very moving. You know, I hope that, again, as I've said, for people who suffer from gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria, whatever you want to call it, I really hope and pray that you get the help that you need. And I am not going to pretend that medical science has the answers for everybody in transgenderism. That doesn't mean that we should ignore medical science and declare that men are women, or that you are a female just because you think that you are a female. You know, there is therapy available for people. You know, psychiatrists talking to people, but that doesn't mean that there's always a solution for everybody. I'm not going to suggest that there is some cure-all. If there were a cure-all, I assume that people would be taking it. But I am going to suggest that it's not up to society to redefine truth and reality. Because there are people who suffer from mental illness, it's up to us to actually acknowledge truth and reality so that we can also acknowledge that if the agenda would be getting back to a non-psychosis-based view of your own sex, then we could actually aim for that as opposed to mainstreaming delusion and enmeshing people in a condition that has an incredibly high suicide rate. I mean, we should actually be looking for better treatments, not pretending we're satisfied with the treatments we have, and it's just society's fault, which is sort of what the problem is. Frederick says, hey, Ben, As a constitutional conservative, I can't imagine you're a big TR fan. Correct. I do not like Teddy Roosevelt's administration. If you could replace him with one president on Mount Rushmore, who would it be? And if you would add a fifth president to Mount Rushmore, who would it be? Well, I think Reagan deserves to be on Mount Rushmore. He took down the Soviet Union, created a booming economy. He is in my top four of all time. I'm not sure that Jefferson actually deserves to be on Mount Rushmore. I got to be truthful about this. I don't like Mount Rushmore. I think that Mount Rushmore, it's cool. I've been there. It's really neat. But I don't like idols, and Mount Rushmore comes dangerously close to idol worship. This idea that these are the people in the pantheon and now we must worship. I don't like giant statues of people, just generally speaking. I think giant statues of people is one short step to worship of people. I don't like it. My religion ain't big on idolatry and graven images. Neither am I. I don't think it's a good idea to have all even things that I think are really cool, like the Lincoln Memorial. Again, worship of politicians is a bad idea, and I don't. It's not something I'm a fan of. Benjamin says, "Hey Ben, what's the connection between the Democrats of Jim Crow and the Democrats of Black Lives Matter?" Thank you. The connection is race baiting. The connection is that the Democrats of Jim Crow suggested a racial politics that would win them election based on the definition of another race as the other. The Democrats of Black Lives Matter are doing in a softer way, because obviously they don't have controls of the levers of government in terms of legislation. They're promulgating the same sort of theory, which is that there is one group of people in the United States victimizing another group of people, and you can identify it based on race. And that's a dangerous, dangerous philosophy. Sean says, "Ben, why is it God appointed Aaron and his son as a priestly class in perpetuity, despite Aaron constructing the golden calf while Moses was atop Sinai? That seems like a pretty serious sin, and an especially relevant one for potential priests." Well, first of all, if you recall, God actually demotes Aaron in the Bible. So it turns out that he elevates Phinehas a little bit later in the Bible to do a lot of the priestly duties, and Aaron's sons end up getting killed for overstepping their boundaries. So God establishing Aaron as the priestly caste, as opposed to Moses, who's sort of the governmental class, was a necessity at the time. And it is true that Aaron sinned, but I think Aaron was pretty amply punished for those sins over and over and over again. In fact, there's a lot of commentaries that suggest that the cryptic section in the Bible about the red calf, you know, the red heifer, that you burn the red heifer and you use this to absolve people of what they call tumah, of impurity, that was a clear reference to the idea that you have to burn up the calf that Aaron created. Leanne says, "You said you are for government being out of marriage, but how would divorce and custody cases be solved if courts cannot recognize the marriage? What about benefits like citizenship?" So when it comes to court and divorce and custody cases, I think divorce should be governed by contract. You should have a contract with your spouse that determines how that works. As far as children, there the government does have a say in the well-being of children, and there should be a social standard with regard to kids, because kids can't take care of themselves, and you shouldn't be able to sign a contract shuttling the kids between the two, or determining the kids will be sold into slavery or something like that. There you do have to have a definition of what is best for the child, but that's not always the same thing as the definition of marriage. I mean, there are going to be cases where you evaluate that the best needs of the child actually involve the kids not living with one parent or the other parent, but actually living with the grandparents, for example. That's actually fairly common in everyday life. So, you know, that's a little bit more complicated than marriage with regard to child custody. But child custody doesn't necessarily have to be connected with marriage. And Kevin says, "Ben, huge fan, big follower. I'm having a difficult time at work. I work in a liberal environment, seeing a lot of liberal BS fed to some of our younger and less knowledgeable employees. It's to the point where I feel obligated to at least show them the alternative and teach them conservative principles. Is this a battle I lose either way, or do I just let it be?" Well, you have to determine whether you're going to get fired and how much you like the job. I mean, it really is that simple. You have to determine what is your goal. If your goal is to convince people, then you talk to the people who seem most open to having conversations. Trying to browbeat people into conversation ain't going to work. Your best option is to gauge whether the conversation is both necessary and productive, and then have it if you can. And if it involves you losing your livelihood, I don't think that that's a conversation that is necessarily worthwhile. Okay, so we are about to hit the weekend. Still big news to come today about the healthcare bill and where this is going. And over at dailywire.com, check it out, because we will keep you updated. If not, then we will be back here on Monday to rehash whatever goes down. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
"I'm okay,"
when the truth is,
"I don't want my problems to burden anyone,"
or you say,
"Hang it in there,"
because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak,
then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.